This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. Wisconsin Democratic State Senator Kathleen Vinehout was first elected to serve the 31st Senate District in the fall of 2006. In her bid for re-election this year, she'll be facing one of two Republican challengers who we'll hear from shortly. The 31st District covers all or parts of six western Wisconsin counties, including Buffalo, Trempealeau, and Jackson, all just north of La Crosse, plus Pierce, Pepin, and Eau Claire. Cities included in the district include Black River Falls, Arcadia, Galesville, Fountain City, Alma, and Eau Claire. Two Republicans are running in the August 12th primary election. The winner will face Vinehout in November's general election. Bill Ingram of Durand is a retired police officer and a member of the Pepin County Board of Supervisors. Mel Pittman of Plum City is a dairy farmer and past member of the Pierce County Board of Supervisors. They participated in a broadcast forum recorded earlier this week in Wisconsin Public Radio's Eau Claire studios, including listener questions. Please note, because this was recorded earlier this week, no new calls can be accepted. The forum's moderator is WPR's Rich Kramer.
So first, a bit of why the legislature, why you? And I'll start with you, Mel Pittman.
Well, Rich, I'm a family man. I have three children and two grandchildren. I'm also a dairy farmer. I've been doing that for 38 years. And we focus on producing high-quality milk. It's good for our business, and it's also good for consumers. But in addition to that, my steering committee, when we organized in this past winter, they said, what's one thing that stands out about Mel Pittman? And they said, common sense. He's a person that listens well, thinks the issues through clearly, and makes good decisions. And my focus has always been on quality and efficiency. It doesn't matter if it's running a business or if we're working on a government-level job. And so with that type of background, I think I'd make a good candidate. And people also notice that about me because they've stepped up and they've asked me if I was interested in running for this position.
So running because you were asked and because you thought you fit the job, or was there any one specific thing that kind of said, you know what, they need my help down there?
Well, along the way, it's good to have people that have abilities to step up and serve, and that's a lot of the reason why I'm doing this. Okay. I think I have the ability and I have the qualities that are needed to do a better job serving this area of the state of Wisconsin than our current incumbent.
Gotcha. Bill Ingram, what about you? What got you interested in running for Kathleen Vinehout's Senate seat?
Well, first of all, you said we only have an hour or so. There's so much messed up that we don't actually have the time. But that's really it. There's so many problems that are wrong. And a lot of it is just the red tape within the organization. Mm-hmm. And it's the way that the government is being run lately. I mean, I'm on the Pepin County Board. We have issues there. But a lot of the issues that we have on the county board, we can deal with as elected officials. However, the state government and the federal government like to use this term smaller government. So they've been outsourcing a lot of these things to private companies. Now, on the county level, if there's an issue with something, we can get together as the board. We can make a vote. We can solve that. However, if you got a private company that's underneath a department, that's underneath a committee, that's underneath the electric body, and they do something that company holds up their little contract and says, yes, I can do it this way, and there's nothing you can do about it. And that's kind of how the Air Force a few years ago were paying $300 for hammers, $1,500 for toilet seats. And that's just the start. I mean, we could go on and on and on of examples of red tape. So,
all right. Well, these red tape cutter, I guess. We do only have an hour, and it tends to be a very constrained time frame to get through all the issues that we'd like to, and also we're definitely not going to be able to learn everything about it, but hopefully give folks a basic idea of what you guys are all about. As far as one of the big issues locally, there's no state senate district in the state where frac sand mining has been more prolific than the 31st. Residents, you know, are split. There's tensions that get high whenever a new frac sand mining operation is proposed. During the last two sessions of the legislature, Republican Senator Tom Tiffany, who doesn't live in our region, he's more on the eastern side of the state or away from the frac sand mining itself, he proposed restricting the ability of local governments to regulate certain things like hours of operations at a mine, noise, property value, guarantees, etc. Bill Ingram, do you think those sorts of regulations should be handled by the state.
Absolutely not.
Why not?
Actually, what he wanted to do was take away the police powers from the county government.
Right.
And that would have – it wouldn't be just frac sand mining. That would be our ability to control a nuclear waste dump or a hazardous waste facility coming in here or anything else that the group in Madison had got together and decided that we don't want this in Milwaukee, but we got a lot of votes. So we're going to send it up to this huge district up here that's got over eight counties in it that really doesn't have much representation as far as area-wise. And we can just get dumped on over and over and over if we don't maintain our Police Powers Act. So I'm very, very much in we got to keep it local. We got to even down to the township level on how to decide how they're going to handle it. I mean, even within the counties, as you travel through the counties or through this district, you get certain townships where the people in that township want to put in a small mine with a wash plant and do everything themselves, and they'll just have a few trucks of the cleaned up sand leaving their area every so often. But you have other places that's just absolutely no, we don't want it. And I don't think, even on the county board, that me as a representative of Wabeek, which is at the north side of the county, should be voting on their frac sand issues that the townships are dealing with down around Pepin and in the Bluffs area. Much less, I don't think Madison ought to have their hands in what we're doing up here.
Mel Pittman, your thoughts as far as the things that are now under what are called police powers, the hours of operation, should that be handled by the state? Even one of the arguments made for introducing those bills was that, you know, some towns can be kind of overtaken by people who are opposed just to be opposed to the mining, that they could abuse that power. What are your thoughts?
Well, I believe it's just like Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Local control is the best way to handle it. The people that are living in those areas are the ones that have to live with the results of what happens with the sand mining issue. So I think that's a key point, is the local control. But I believe there's also some other things that need to be looked at. We do have people that own property, and their property rights are important.
Mm-hmm.
The highway issues are important, whether it's a state or federal highway. Limiting local governments don't have the ability to limit traffic on those. And I think that's something that we all need to be aware of as we move forward in the sand mining industry. But the other part of this whole sand mining industry is I think we can find a balance. We can find a balance at the local level where people that are in favor of it and have the ability to do that should be allowed to do that. And we got to choose wisely. We don't want to be putting a sand mine operation next to a school, for example. We want to keep it out in the more rural areas. And let's look at places where we have rail lines already. If we can reduce transportation costs and damage to our highways by using the rail system versus trucks hauling hundreds of loads a day on our highways, I think those are smart decisions we need to make, even at the local level. As far as state control, I would certainly rather not see any type of state control coming over top of our local control government, simply for the same reasons I stated earlier. Local control, those are the people that have to live with what's happening in that community. They should have the ability to make those decisions.
I want to follow up on that, first with Mel, and then I'll go to Bill. What about environmental concerns? That was another thing that police powers have been used for in certain areas where you can actually, where local governments are kind of imposing their own DNR-type regulations. The bill authors and the industry has said that, you know, that's the state's job. So should a local town be able to use these police powers to, if they think it's necessary to create stronger environmental regulations of any sort than what the DNR has?
Well, it's important that we realize that these processing plants for the sand mining industry take water. They take groundwater.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where the DNR first gets involved, or one of the places where they first get involved, because they have to decide, make a decision, is there adequate groundwater available to operate these plants? And then along with that, local government can also use their ability to, you know, watch that and see the process move forward. But the DNR has that ability on high cap wells to either approve a permit or not approve it. And quite often we hear, even in some agriculture settings, where people want the process to be sped up. They think it takes too long. I believe that it should take as long as necessary. You know, water is an important commodity for all of us, not just for the sand mining industry or agriculture. It's for water is important for all of us as people live in our communities.
Absolutely. Bill Engram, what about what do you think? Should local control extend to certain environmental protections?
Oh, absolutely. Like you mentioned, there are certain groups on certain boards that are adamantly opposed to it. I mean, we have groups around here where a group of people will decide they like to sit up on a bluff and they like the scenery or they like the bike trails in a certain area. And they move here for those reasons, and that's why they live there. Now, to say their rights don't count just because somebody's greased a few palms down in Madison and we got a big multinational corporation coming here where the owners don't even live in our area. They're just coming in here to take our natural resources and make a huge profit off of it. You know, we need to be able to stand up against this. And if it means going down to the township level, yes, that's where it needs to go.
All right, let's go to the phones. We've got a bunch of callers on the line. First, we're going to hear from Joan in Eau Claire. And Joan, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Good morning to your guests. What would you do to unite our citizens after the divisiveness of this current administration has split our state? Also, do you believe in the value of public education? And what would you do to repair the damage done to our public educational system after this governor slashed funding to the Wisconsin public education system by $1.6 billion? Thank you.
Thanks so much, Joan. I think she's going to take the comments or the answers off air. You know, people have different views on the decisions that were made in Madison with regard to the Act 10 and all that, but do you think that there has been a divide that needs to be repaired, Mel Pittman, through that whole process? And what about the cuts that have been made to the public K-12 education?
Well, there have been. Many people see it as a big divide between those that are for and those that are against.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that. When we have people that come up or they believe they come up with less, they're going to be very much opposed to that. Teachers in particular, public union workers, for example, even at our county level, ended up with some of their benefits reduced. And so they are very much opposed to Act 10 and the premise of what all that involved. However, on the other side of the coin is it also saved quite a bit of money. Schools were able to bid out their health insurance to something other than WEA, insurance company,
mm-hmm.
and also at the county level, we were able to reduce our costs so that one of the big positives that they forget to remember is we were able to keep operating within the tax levy that we were allowed to raise and not lay off any employees at our county. And that, to me, that's big because the way the budgets were moving forward, employees would need to be reduced or something in order to stay within our budget.
Sure. Bill Engram, your thoughts on whatever divisiveness there has been since Act 10 was passed and the budget cuts to K-12?
Right. You know, there's people that's going to be upset anyway, but I think what Walker did was the right thing to do. And there's several things. One, the basic that for me was the fact that they took away that if you're not in the union, you still have to pay union dues. I mean, that was a biggie. That, you know, that's, you don't even have a choice. They just decide they're going to do whatever for you, and you have to pay the dues. There are some other things with the way the health insurance on the no-bid health insurance was paid for some of the stuff. And the thing you keep hearing is private schools. Well, private schools want all this money with no competition. That's why all these other charter schools, voucher schools, all these other things are competition. And these people that have been in the public school system forever don't like it because there's competition. But competition makes things better. So
I want to get to the school choice issue in just a bit, but first, playing off of the school funding, a lot of folks feel that the way the formula is written right now, this equalized aid formula that the state uses to fund public schools is broken, and Kathleen Vinehout herself has said that many times, has raised a lot of alarms. Bill, I'll start with you, and we'll go to Mel after that. Do you think the state's current school funding formula serves rural districts in the 31st district well?
No, I don't think so. I mean, whenever the government gets involved in something, it doesn't turn out well. I mean, we've seen that over and over, and it definitely needs to be looked at. I mean, you can't just say, okay, we want a little tweak here, we want a little tweak here. They need to get a group together from all across Wisconsin, whether it be the charter schools, vouchers, the whole works, public school, and come up with something that works better. But I'm going to say something here that I truly believe in. We don't send our kids to school to buy land. But yet, property tax is a huge thing for paying for the schools, and it puts a tremendous burden on landowners, where people who don't earn land get kind of a free ride. We send our kids to school to get an income. I think we should do a little bit of adjusting on this and lower some property taxes, even if it means putting the shift over to the income tax, but that's what we're sending these kids to school for.
Hmm. Mel Pittman, your thoughts on whether or not the school funding formula serves the 31st state Senate district, which has a lot of rural districts.
It could be better. The school funding formula on a per-child basis could be better for the rural areas. But one of the bigger issues along with that is property valuations within our local communities. Senator Vinehalt talks about Pepin, for example, Pepin School District.
And property rich.
Property and rich. And so I believe it's 17%. Is from school funding is on the per pupil basis, and the larger balance has to come from the property owners that live in the communities. And I would disagree with Bill in the sense that he mentioned the land base. The tax base for property taxes has shifted more to homes than on the current land, and in particular ag land. Property taxes on ag land have been, since use value assessment has been in place, has been quite a bit lower and has made it. It's been one of the best farmland preservation programs we have going on right now. But the homeowners are the ones that are paying the bulk of the taxes. Homeowner in Eau Claire here I visited with last week said that their property tax bill was almost $6,000. Well, I paid that much for a 240-acre farm. So they are paying their fair share within the people that live in the cities. It's the homeowners along with the farmers that are paying the property taxes.
Bill, you'd like to respond.
Yeah, that's kind of the point here. The homeowners here are taking a tremendous hit, and we're really losing our family farms in Wisconsin. They're becoming factory farms. They're corporations. They're businesses. But yet they still have the rights and a lot of the tax advantages of the farmers like Mel or my dad were. And they were the small farmers that really made this country. And they're businesses now. They got this huge equipment that's running up and down the highways that are tearing up the roads. The frac sand gets the hit for it. But these huge manure spreaders and all this machinery that's 20-some feet wide is tearing up these roads too. But these factory farms are getting the tax breaks, and all the rest of the residents are paying for it, and they're a corporation that's no different than Menards or Walmart or anything else like that. But because they're farmers, they're taking advantage of the blood and the sweat and tears of all the small mom-and-pop farms that made this country what it is.
With that, let's take our break. We've got candidates running in the 31st State Senate primary for a Republican primary to see who goes on to take on Democratic State Senator Kathleen Vinehout. The candidates are Mel Pittman, he's a dairy farmer in Plum City, and Bill Ingram is a retired police sergeant, also Air Force veteran in Durand.
You're listening to this primary candidates forum for Wisconsin's 31st State Senate District on Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. The forum was recorded earlier this week in our Wisconsin Public Radio studios in Eau Claire. The primary election is next Tuesday, August 12th. The candidate with the most votes from that election will challenge incumbent Democratic Senator Kathleen Vinehout of Alma. She was first elected to the Wisconsin State Senate in 2006. We'll have more of the forum hosted by WPR's Rich Kramer and featuring Republican Mel Pittman of Plum City and Bill Ingram of Durand just ahead here on Newsmakers. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find links to the candidates' website. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. We're in the middle of a Republican primary forum for Wisconsin's 31st State Senate District. The 31st District includes small, medium, and large communities like Galesville, Alma, Black River Falls, and the city of Eau Claire, covering all or parts of six western Wisconsin counties, including Jackson, Trempealeau, Buffalo, Pepin, Pierce, and Eau Claire. The Republican candidates in this forum are Mel Pittman, a Plum City dairy farmer and former member of the Pierce County Board of Supervisors, and Bill Ingram, a retired police officer and member of the Pepin County Board of Supervisors from Durand. The winner of this coming Tuesday, August 12th primary will challenge incumbent Democratic State Senator Kathleen Vinehout of Alma, who is completing her second four-year term in the Wisconsin Senate. Wisconsin Public Radio's Rich Kramer moderated the forum, recorded earlier this week at the WPR studios in Eau Claire, including questions from callers.
Kim in Arcadia has been waiting for a little while. Thanks a lot, Kim. You're on the air.
Hello. My question is, what are the stances on illegal immigrants getting driver's license, and how do you feel about that? And I also have a question about when the tax levies for the county board, I'm wondering how you voted on that stance, too, if you voted with the company or with the community, or you voted for government.
All right. First, let's do the immigration question, and let's see here. Mel Pittman, a lot of dairy farms have a larger CAFO kind of dairy farm operations have migrant worker help. And do you think those folks should be allowed to get driver's licenses? And what's your stance on the illegal immigration?
Well, is there a possibility to get our caller back on air? Because I want to have her repeat that first part of the question.
Sure. Are you there, Kim?
Yes, I am.
The first part of the question, you had the illegal immigration
I'm just wondering about the stance on illegal immigrants getting driver's license. How do you feel about that?
I was just wanted to be clear.
Off the top of my head, I'm not sure if Wisconsin allows that, but I know some states, including California, does definitely.
No, I'm not in favor of illegal immigrants having a driver's license. They need to have the proper IDs and certification to be here in this country. So if they don't have that, there's no reason why we should give them a driver's license either.
Okay. Bill Ingram, your thoughts?
Oh, I agree. I mean, we talked about this at a different debate, and back then Mel had a different answer. But that's why I'm surprised that
I didn't.
You said?
I said it was legal immigrants, yes. Illegals, no.
Okay. We'll go with that.
But so what about the overall issue, though? I mean, we've got a lot of people streaming over the border right now. But, again, in rural Wisconsin, on a lot of these bigger dairy farms, there's a lot of migrants. It's kind of a, don't ask, don't tell sort of policy, it seems, in some cases.
Right, and that all needs to come to a stop. I mean, that's all kind of directed by Obama. There's a tremendous push here to close our borders and get these illegals out of here so that American workers can have jobs.
Sure.
But when these workers are working here and they take the money, first of all, they're getting a lesser wage. So that takes away an employment opportunity for an American. And then they start sending the money home. That's money that if it was done by a local person, that money would be spent locally within our community. I mean, we're creating a tremendous cash flow problem here. And then you get into all the stuff like they're sending the kids here. Now Obama wants more money for that. It's not just the farms, too. They're in warehouses. They're in food service. They're in all the businesses around here. And the Obama administration is really stopping any enforcement effort to put a stop to this.
So should the Wisconsin legislature pass some bills, make some laws that would punish, farmers or any company or anyone who knowingly employs migrants beyond what punishments there already are?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's several of them out there across the board that have been recommended, between fines or pulling their business permits. I mean, there's numerous things. But, I mean, it's illegal. It's illegal to hire them, and these people are acting illegally. I mean, if they were doing something else illegal, they'd be all over it. But there seems to be looking the other way, and it's all for profit. You know, that's you follow the money. It's for profit. It's for greed.
Mel, what's your thought? Should the businesses and or farmers be punished for the hiring of illegals?
They currently are. There is a process in place where they have to have the verification from these workers. I'm not sure what the correct form number is.
Yeah.
But if they are actually hiring an illegal person, and they are, and it is checked on from the employment history, because even our dairy farm of 75 cows, we're a small dairy farm, we have to have the proper identification, even for someone that lives in the state of Wisconsin, a resident of the state of Wisconsin. So we have to have the proper paperwork, and if they are found to be faulty or they are hiring an illegal, as the term is being used today. Yes, they're under severe penalties for that. So it's sometimes it's difficult to get the right information, but that's still the farmer or the owner's responsibility.
Gotcha. Kim, what was, if you could go again with the second half, what county are you talking about? And you mentioned something about voting for the company or for the county. I didn't follow that.
Well, I'm kind of confused. I'm Duran and Pippin, when the members are on the board and there's the funding is not there, how did they vote to increase taxes? Were they with did you vote with the majority, or how did you vote?
Okay.
I mean, how did the candidates vote in their county board? Because each member, I believe, was on the county board.
Was on a county board. The different counties, but Bill, you're on the Pepin County board. Any thoughts? Did you guys raise taxes or not?
Well, the county board raised the taxes a maximum amount allowed by law.
Right.
And I voted against it every year I've been on the board.
Okay.
So.
All right. And Mel, you just got off the Pierce County board. Same question to you. Did you guys raise taxes to the maximum set by the levy limit that the state put out?
When the proposed budget came forward, usually the levy limit increase was about a 1 to 1.5%.
Okay.
And I did vote in favor of that, and I'll tell you why. Because at some point we have to have a budget passed. An easy out for Bill is to say, no, I voted no. I voted for no tax increases. A responsible person has to get a budget through. And I believe that this question that came in from this lady has been set up.
Well, for what it's worth, Kim, thank you so much for the questions. Bill, any response to that?
Well, yeah. I mean, when we talk about the budgets, first of all, they always go for benefits and pay. And so then they say, well, we can't decrease the budget, so we're going to start lowering people's salary, taking benefits. They don't look at all the other line item stuff in the budget that could be cut. There's so much stuff that's not required that we're doing. For example, in Pepin County, we're paying $16 to $18 per meal for senior citizens, where you could give them a voucher, send them to a restaurant downtown, probably get away for $6 or $7 at some of these places. But that's just the tip of it. There is so much stuff, again, red tape, bureaucracy, where we're out here providing services that aren't required. And if they are, they're way beyond what's necessary. I mean, we're doing maybe 50 people a day at that price level. I mean, that stuff's ridiculous.
Back to the phones we go, and this one is coming. This call is coming from Gene in Eau Claire. Gene, you're on the air. Thanks so much for calling in. What's your question?
Okay, now I heard some statements made regarding competition for private schools against public schools giving them competition.
Sure.
And as a taxpayer, I want to know how much of my tax dollars do you plan to vote for spending on private schools? And I also want to know what accountability you have to me as a taxpayer for my abilities to go and see what that money's being spent on in the private schools.
All right.
The amount of education those teachers have and what that money's being spent on.
Thanks so much, Gene. Bill, you mentioned the competition, so we'll go to you first. Would you vote to expand the vouchers and the choice schools to include the 31st Senate District?
Well, I think, yeah, we should get the have those abilities within the 31st. Yes, absolutely. Now, when she said, how much are you willing to go, you know, that's all stuff that's negotiated on, worked on. So you can't put a number on anything right now. You have to wait and see how it goes through all the committees and then comes up to vote. And unfortunately, then it's kind of a yay or nay. A lot of the times, the different legislators aren't even in these committees that go and develop this stuff.
But if a bill came that said, okay, statewide for the voucher and the choice programs, you'd vote yes.
Oh, yeah, I think we need some competition up here. I mean, they did a thing in Pepin County a few years ago about several alternatives, and they found several problems where teachers were making ridiculous salaries, and they had a couple people in their classes, and these, I sure, were special classes of some sort, but they found a tremendous amount of excess spending there. People get, you know, if one person is teaching this class and somebody has more degrees, well, then they get paid more, even though they're not providing any more information to the students. You know, there's a, you know, you get your doctors, you get your masters or things like that, you get more pay. And if you're teaching a first grader, how much more pay can you get? How much more service can you get for those extra things? We have a school system that basically indulges itself. We have doctors that get doctor's degree in stuff that never get hired by a company, but yet they get hired back into the university system to teach those things at tremendous salaries.
Very quickly, what about accountability? That's been a big complaint about people from people that are against the vouchers and the private schools getting state funding.
Oh, yeah. There's two arguments of that. One is the fact that the money doesn't really, once it goes, it's tagged to the student. So once the student decides or the parent decides to send that student to the private school, it's the parent's responsibility because they chose to send the student to that school to monitor to see if the kid is getting, the parent thinks he's getting what's right back. There's another group to say, well, that's taxpayer dollars. We should be monitoring the results of that. But we don't go into the police department and monitor every dollar that the police department sends to see if they're getting their money back or the DNR on how they're spending every dollar.
Well, people can through the city council,
right,
or whatever.
But if you go to high, you're going to build a road and you outsource to a private business to build that road, you don't go to that business and say, we gave you X amount of $1 million. We want to know every chair, every paperclip, everything, and how much you paid your salaries. We just look, the end result is we got a good road out of that. Now, did we get a good kid out of that? You know, who's better to make the decision for your kid, the parent or the government? And I say it should be the parent's choice.
All right, Mill Pittman, if you were, you know, elected to the legislature or the Senate, and a bill did come to expand the school choice, the voucher, the private schools getting state funding statewide, would you do it?
Well, first of all, I'd like to go back on the last question before that when we talked about the tax levy and just counter bill on one item.
Oh, sure.
Bill talks about cutting this and cutting that. And I got to ask Bill, have you ever brought a proposal forward to actually reduce the cost in the process of doing the budget? I've done that a number of times, and I've actually saved the taxpayers some money along the way. But when the final product needs to be either passed up or down, I think it's important that people stand up. And even if it is a slight tax increase, it's time to stand up and pass something that's good for the majority of the people. You're never going to pass something that pleases everyone. And on the part about school choice, yes, I believe school choice is important. The dollars need to follow the students. Accountability is key. Competition does bring out the best in people. And as far as teachers being paid too much, I disagree with Bill. My daughter is a school teacher, has been a school teacher. Teachers do not get paid too much. There might be other ways we can solve this issue, but it's not by saying teachers are paid too much money. You know, they need to be recognized for their years of service, just like a business owner would hopes to make more money as they continue on in business down the road. There's no different with teachers. They need to be compensated more for their time and experience their knowledge and education. Are there good teachers? Yes. Are there poor teachers? Yes, there are. And that's where the competition hopefully can weed out the poor teachers and ask them to do something else for a living rather than continue teaching schools.
All right, Bill, I believe there was a question in there for you. Any response?
Yeah. Oh, first of all, yes, I have. One of the things is they tried to do a wheel tax in Pepin County, $10 wheel tax on every vehicle in the county. I started a petition. I did an editorial in the paper, and I got a bunch of people to show up at the meeting, and we defeated that issue where they were trying to raise taxes. Another reason, and one of my main reasons for voting against it, was they increased the Humane Society amount that went up from like, I don't know, 10, 15,000 to 40,000. There was a tremendous increase. And basically from an interview with the Humane Society, if they take a dog in, and they only take dogs, they spend approximately $150 on that, getting it cleaned up and treated and so on and so forth. And then they have a minimum wage employee show up twice a day to feed that dog, and they keep that dog until somebody will pay $150 for it. The problem is some of those dogs stayed several months. So if you've got a minimum wage employee at roughly $7 plus food, you're at $15 a day, and over a month, that's $415 that you've got invested beyond the $150, and that dog stays there for several months. To me, if I'm trying to sell something for $150 and it's costing me $15 a day, at some point I'm going to start lowering that cost or just give it away to get rid of it to reduce the cost. But that's why they were saying they needed so much more money, and that type of wasteful spending you just can't condone.
We just hinted at a wheel tax that's bringing us beautifully, I think, as far as segues are concerned, into the transportation funding issue that Wisconsin has. I mean, there is in the current state budget, Governor Walker had proposed borrowing nearly $1 billion. Well, that got kicked around a little bit, and there were some other things done with that. But in the next budget cycle, lawmakers are expecting that there's going to be a $650 million transportation deficit. You've got the gas tax revenues that are dwindling. Cars are more efficient. Should we look to things like toll roads or raising or statewide wheel tax or anything like that? Mel Pittman, I'll start with you.
Well, there's going to be a need to find some more revenue for the transportation fund. People expect decent roads to drive on, and Wisconsin roads have been going backwards. The interstate is probably in a better shape than what it has been, but we're talking other federal and state highways, and even our local roads at county level, township roads, they're all suffering from lack of dollars. So how are we going to fund this? I think all options need to be on the table to look at.
Do you favor anyone? I mean, there are a number. I can't go through them right now. I can't think of them off the top of my head, but I know it's
The ones we need to look at, we need to look at what's comparable to the states around us first. Gas tax is a really tough one because when you look to the west in Minnesota, for example, those gas taxes usually end up lower at the retail pumps. Mm-hmm. And one thing that's really hurts us or can really hurt us is people that are crossing the border back and forth and they're filling up over in Minnesota.
Sure.
Not only are we losing that 3 to 4 cents difference in gas tax, we're losing the 30-some cents that Wisconsin doesn't get at all on that purchase of gas. So we have to keep that within a reasonable amount of our neighboring states. But you're right. When it comes to transportation, more fuel-efficient vehicles are creating a difference, and also maybe even these electric cars that aren't buying any gas at all. Mm-hmm. So we have to find an opportunity to tap into some type of structure that will allow us to get some compensation from those vehicles. Whether it's, like Bill mentioned, a wheel tax is something I would look at. Another one, wheel tax is nothing more than just a registration fee.
Yeah.
Neighboring states actually charge quite a bit more for that. Another one is that's been mentioned, I'm not sure I would support it this time, would be a mileage fee.
Yeah.
A mileage fee for the number of miles you drive. What I don't like about that is big government's looking down on us a whole lot more than I'd like to see. And that's one reason I would probably shy away from that one. But we got to come up with something. Well, maybe it's general purpose revenue. I'm not sure, but we got to come up with something.
Bill Ingram, in fact, general purpose revenue, there was a large amount of money that was shifted to the transportation budget in this existing, the biennial state budget that we're in right now. So, Bill, gas tax is definitely dwindling. There are other options that have been discussed. Any specifics on what you'd like to see done?
Well, first of all, when you take in consideration that the zoo interchange in Milwaukee is costing $650 million, mm-hmm. which is exactly what the overrun is. I mean, there's so much, I don't want to call it wasteful spending, but I think they probably could have done that intersection a little different. I mean, that's more than the budget of all the rest of the state counties put together as far as highway goes.
It's a mega project.
Yeah. So then when you step into things like the gas tax is a flat tax. We got the same amount of money when gas was $2 a gallon as it is when it's $4 a gallon, but our highway departments have to pay the higher expenses to go with that, and they aren't getting anything to do with that. Now, there's been some people suggesting that maybe you look at a percentage-based thing, that's that gas tax slides up and down with the cost of fuel. Again, that's a raise of taxes. So you start looking at some other ones. You got the implements of husbandry, a new law out that's tremendously increased the weights of that. Mm-hmm. And even here locally, they had a semi-rollover down here by Rock Falls that was 24,000 pounds overweight. You know, it's hard to regulate these trucks on the road when they're only going a few miles from farm to farm. But when you're 24,000 pounds overweight, that goes back into that same thing that I mentioned earlier about the mentality of the corporate factory farms that don't care for the laws. They don't care for the immigration. They don't care for basically any of these things. And they're getting a free ride from the taxpayers on the getting farm rates for all this because they simply call themselves a farm. Now, the other thing is outsourcing. I went to Madison last year to a seminar put on by the transportation department, and I expected to see how we're going to get more money for the counties. What they actually did was introduced us to these lobbyists that were for the asphalt and the paving and stuff. And it came out as, I'd like to introduce you to the guys that are going to be doing your road work in the future. So they're cutting the county budgets and then once again giving it out to the private businesses, which I talked about earlier on the smaller government thing, you know, and I say we need to keep it local. We need to keep the jobs local. Our guys cannot be out here running the roads in Pepin County. They still have the paver. They still have the trucks to haul everything. They have some excellent people that do the road designs and so on and so forth. So we need to keep it locally, and I'm totally opposed to the mileage fee of anything where you have to record anything and then report to the government for, you know, what you do.
Mm-hmm. We are doing the 31st State Senate District Primary Candidate Forum. Two Republicans are up for the primary that will be on Tuesday. Then whoever wins that race, either Bill Ingram or Mel Pittman, will go on to challenge State Senator Kathleen Vinehout, a Democrat from Alma. The 31st State Senate District includes counties like Pierce, Pepin, Buffalo, and Trempealeau counties, Eau Claire County, Jackson County, some of the bigger cities, Eau Claire, Prescott, Durand, Independence, Whitehall, Alma, Black River Falls, Arcadia, and Galesville. Willem and Colfax, you're on the air. Thanks so much for calling, Willem.
Good morning.
Morning.
I had a question to Mr. Ingram, and then a question for both candidates. My question to Mr. Ingram was that he seemed to imply with about the road thing that there would be tax dollars going to these private companies. What's the difference between that and tax dollars going to private companies that are going to run these choice schools? And in our Constitution, free public education is part of the mandate of the state constitution. And if competition always makes things better, then I think it would be consistent of your argument to lobby for a private military force to compete with our government military, and the same for fire departments and police departments. So I think it's an inconsistent argument, and it doesn't really, I just don't understand that. And the other question I had for both people running, why are you running for the Republican Party when the Republican Party lately has been the party of big business interest, corporate interest in like frac sand mining and other things that like the group ALEC, which supports a lot of Republican candidates in our state and actually writes model legislation that's been passed by the Republicans in our state.
Mm-hmm.
They have a new, during their 2014 spring campaign, one of their big issues was to stamp out local control because it gets in the way of doing what they want, like big corporations or big corporate farms.
All right, well, we hear you loud.
You get my point.
We get your point.
Why run for the Republican?
All right, thanks so much for that. First, Bill Ingram, Willem had a question for you. If subsidizing with state dollars the private schools is a good thing, why not the private contractors that are going to do the roads in Pepin?
Okay, you're comparing apples to oranges, basically. I mean, when you got private schools, you've got alternatives. I mean, when you get your Social Security check, the government doesn't say, well, you have to go to this store to buy it, or we're going to provide you food because it's taxpayer dollars. This is a school thing that goes to the kid, and like I said, the parent gets to decide where the kid goes to school. Now, that's different than trying to take our county highway money and saying, okay, the state is going to decide who's greased their palms down in Madison and is going to send some business that's a Madison-based, Milwaukee-based, or wherever-based company up here to do our job up here and take income out of the pockets of the local county people. Now, if you have a school voucher school or whatever, that's going to be done by private citizens up here in this local area that are going to be spending that money that they get here in the local, at the local restaurants, at the local grocery stores, the local gas station, so on and so forth. So is that satisfactory to you?
It's not my question.
Okay.
So Mel Pittman, the second question, why Willem was wondering why you guys are running as Republicans, the party of big business, maybe, and recently in the state legislature, it seems like there have been bills that have been paring back local control.
I guess I'd just respond to Bill's answer for the question he just answered here. Bill uses the term greased palms. He talks about government being corrupt. Government's not perfect, but we try to do a good job. I believe that doesn't matter if it's private outsourcing. I think that's an option we need to be looking at, whether it's highway work,
sure,
or anything else along the line, human services work. If we can find a way to do it better, we should be looking at it. Does it always work out that way initially? There may not be. There may be some hiccups along the way that we need to fix and amend along the way and make it better. And as far as the question you had asked me then was why we're running as Republicans, right?
That was Willem's question, yeah.
The Republican values fit my values better. I think we have, in essence, we have enough government. We don't need any more. And the Democratic Party seems to want to do more tax and spending along the way. And I believe that we need to keep government under control. The social values are important to me. That's another reason why I'm running as a Republican. I'd like to see Republicans are not just for big business. Republicans are, I believe, are for all businesses to help them succeed, keep taxes at a level we can all manage, and we can actually achieve more prosperity through private enterprise than we can by growing government.
All right, very good. And Bill Ingram.
Yeah, one thing is it's the moral issue. You know, the Republicans have more of a moral thing. They're opposed to abortion and things like that.
Sure.
They also believe in individual freedom, the right to choose if you want to carry a gun to protect yourself from all this crazy stuff that's going on, or decide not to. And then when seconds count because somebody's shooting in the office next year, you're on the phone calling the police and hopefully they'll get here within 5 or 10 minutes. You know, it's choice. The Republicans offer choice. The Democrats seem to just think the government's going to take care of them and they take this thing that the big government is going to take over. And their example is as valid as our example is about social. Big is bad. I mean, mom and pop, local, is in middle class, is what makes this country. I mean, if we have only one choice of where to buy our groceries from, that's just as bad as our government telling us where we're going to buy the groceries from. You know, big on either side is bad. That's why we're here. We're local, and that's what I keep promoting, is keep it local.
Candidates in this next Tuesday, August 12th, Republican primary in western Wisconsin's 31st state Senate district. We heard from Bill Ingram of Durand, a retired police officer and member of the Pepin County Board of Supervisors, and Mel Pittman of Plum City, a dairy farmer and former member of the Pierce County Board of Supervisors. They participated in a candidates forum recorded earlier this week in Wisconsin Public Radio's Eau Claire studios, moderated by WPR's Rich Kramer. The winner of this next Tuesday's primary will face incumbent Democrat Kathleen Vinehout of Alma. In November's general election, Vinehout has represented the district, which includes all or part of Trempealeau, Buffalo, Jackson, Pierce, Pepin, and Eau Claire counties since 2007. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. Our production team includes Maureen McCollum, Mary Meehan Stroob, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at WPR.org/newsmakers. You'll also find a link to the candidates' websites and Wisconsin Vote, where you can learn more about all of the elections taking place in the primary and the general elections, a joint project between Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television. That's WisconsinVote.org. Our website also includes archives of other recent editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at WPR.org/newsmakers.